You know who that is?
That's Michael Burnham.
The Mutineer.
In the flesh.
Dead in the first 2 days of war.
8,186.
Welcome to the Discovery. I'm Captain Gabriel Lorca.
Captain, what am I doing on this ship?
I have something on deck that requires every trained mind available.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, listening to his uncle's Beatles cover band.
Okay, and we have a very special guest, currently crawling through the Jefferies tube reciting Alice in Wonderland, Vicky Sue.
Hello, hello.
Vicky, great to have you back on the show. I'm so glad you're actually our first guest to come on to the program since Star Trek Discovery premiered.
Oh, wow, that's quite an honor.
I would like to think so, yeah. So we want to talk about Context is for Kings.
Right, episode three.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to jump into it in kind of a different way. Let's go back to one of the first episodes you ever appeared on the show, Vicky, ranking the captains, in which we went through all the big names
right. And
said, oh, maybe Picard is number one.
I think we were all in agreement of that.
Exactly. I think all three of us were.
Picard was the number one choice. Yeah.
So now we know a little bit more. We've been introduced to one, Georgiou, in episodes one and two. Now we have one Captain Lorca in episode three.
This really felt like episode one.
It really did.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But a lot slower episode one.
Right.
Yeah, not maybe the propulsive speed at which we had the introduction in the first two episodes, mm-hmm. but it's still all good to me.
Right.
I'm intrigued by this. So why don't we kind of recontextualize things and talk about, now that we know more about all the captains, we can kind of maybe update our rankings to a certain degree, or just talk about how these captains are further into the series at this point.
Right. So maybe before we start, Vicky, why don't you just talk about your thoughts on the premiere of Star Trek Discovery?
I thought the premiere was really good. I don't think that it was really in Roddenberry's realm of Star Trek, but I think that I really enjoyed it, and I appreciate this new angle that they're going for and trying to kind of capture a lot of the movie watchers as opposed to the diehard Trekkies.
Yeah, do you think as a fan, you've been watching it since like Voyager, like that's what really got
I've been watching it since TNG, actually.
TNG, okay, yeah. My apologies. But as like a longtime fan,
yeah,
is this going to be something that's going to grip other big fans, or do you think this is mostly reaching out to new audiences?
I think that it will grip other big fans, but it's based on the first episode, it's definitely a new generation of Star Trek. It's not really in tune with all of the philosophy and kind of that all of that big thinking that is associated with Star Trek.
There's maybe a few moments here or there, but it wasn't like this overarching thing in those two episode premiere.
No,
right?
And it's a lot of drama, actually, I find,
right,
in between the characters.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if they ever... I mean, look, the show just started. We've seen three episodes, and really, the first two are really one episode. It'll be curious to see if we ever get to a point where they're doing, like, Measure of a Man episodes where it's like, here's the philosophical idea, let's talk about it for an hour.
Right.
I'm just fascinated because so far the show's not giving the vibe that it would seg into that sort of territory very well.
No.
Yeah, maybe not the big overarching themes at this point. I think it lends... The fact that we're watching a serialized show maybe doesn't lend itself to that so much as those kind of adventures.
Like the ones where they really just stop dead to talk about an issue for an hour.
Yeah.
Like some of the great episodes, I say that kind of comedically, but you know, like those are some of the really great Star Trek episodes when they're written well. The ones that are written badly, like, good Lord, but... Well,
guys, let's just jump into it with Context is for Kings. We are introduced to the USS Discovery. I have to ask you guys, what do you make of this introduction that we have here, Vicky? Are you intrigued by what this ship, fresh off the assembly line, as they put it, has to offer us as viewers?
I am intrigued. I mean, they've deemed it as a science vessel, and we actually haven't really gotten to know a lot of the ship. The only thing that we've seen are some of the hallways and the mess hall. And what, the captain's ready room?
Yeah.
And we haven't really seen a lot of the bridge either.
Cam, what do you make of this kind of introduction? I'll throw this out to you. Say, main engineering. Is this kind of a different take than what we've seen in previous incarnations?
Well, it has definitely kind of a colder, tougher look.
Yeah.
Like, when I think of engineering, for example, from, like, the Next Generation, it seems kind of, like, relaxing. Or, you know, like, you could see, like, in the original series, Scotty hanging out there.
Sure.
This does not look like a place anyone would want to hang out.
Yeah, there's no, like, footstool or, like, somewhere where you just lean up against a wall or anything.
Right.
Like
no.
That.
It didn't seem like engineering to me, because the warp core wasn't kind of the centerpiece of the
right
of yeah engineering. It kind of made me think more of like the old school TOS engineering,
right?
But I and the are there other engineerings that have like this mushroom lab right next door to it?
Yes. Wait, I thought they all had mushroom labs.
Okay, I was a little bit thrown off. Like, why don't they just have this separate mushroom lab? Why does it have to be adjacent to main engineering?
Well, in the original series, where do you think Sulu was doing botany?
Well, if they're, because at the end of the episode, they say that they're using the mushrooms for propulsion, so that would be part of engineering.
This is why we have Vicky on the show.
Yeah.
To, dumb people like me just can't figure
otherwise,
these
the
out.
Show would have been an hour of you and I debating why there's spores near the engineering.
Yeah. Well, why don't we jump into also Captain Lorca, because he's kind of the big kahuna who's introduced here. I am intrigued by what this guy is up to, this
no
Jason Isaacs. Oh, you know, if he was like a guest star in Next Generation, he'd be the quote-unquote evil captain.
He's a pressman.
Well, he would be an admiral, actually.
Yeah, well, that's very much like what we always see with these kind of admirals. Like, he's kind of... do you think, Cam, that they're maybe telegraphing a little bit too much that he is up to no good?
Just a little.
Every moment with this guy?
There's nothing but remotely, like, you know, likable about him.
Well, okay, you say likable.
I shouldn't say likable, but like...
I find him very likable. Like,
I don't think he's that likable.
I think he's likable.
Really?
Yeah.
He seems kind of creepy to me.
He's got some amazing...
In an almost kind of Negan kind of way.
He's got charisma.
Yeah,
you know,
he's
got kind of the... You understand why people are under his command.
Sure.
You don't think he's likable?
I wouldn't say he's likable. No, I'd say he's like...
What makes him unlikable then?
I think he has like that real authoritarian vibe that's very unpleasant to me. I'm like, oh, like, this is not a guy I'd want to be on a ship.
Cam doesn't like authority, Vicky.
No, I don't. I don't.
Do you find him intimidating? Is that what it is?
Okay. Hell yeah. I want to be with the space hippies.
That's what makes a captain respectable, is that they have... some authority.
I would say all the captains were intimidating.
But it's how they wield it. Like, I don't look at Picard and be like, that guy looks like he's going to punch me out in a second if I, like, misbehave.
Sure.
You know?
Hey, Cam, this is not a democracy, as Lorca spelled out to Stamets.
And, like, look at Kirk, man. It's a party on the Enterprise, like, every week.
Okay, but do you think this is the fault of the actor? This is what's on page
here. No, it's on the page.
No, but you don't find... Okay, maybe I'll rephrase this. Do you find Jason Isaacs' performance intriguing and charismatic?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you still don't like him.
No.
Like, you wouldn't go want to hang out with him at a bar.
No, not at all.
Okay, I can buy that, but I'd still find that he's kind of a... I'm drawn to him.
Okay.
I dig this
You're
Captain
part of
Lorca.
The problem, Tyler.
Oh, absolutely. I have no illusion that this is not a good dude. This is not your Jean-Luc Picard kind of guy, right, Vicky?
No, he's not. But I missed what happened to his eye.
So he was in a battle with the Klingons,
and
they're like, yo, if you want to get a bionic eye, go for it. And he's like, I don't want a bionic eye. So now he has to keep all the lights dim throughout the ship so that he...
He toils in darkness.
Everything about this is evil, right, Cam? I don't think this is a spoiler. This is just mostly speculation on my part, but Jason Isaacs is not in it beyond season one, right?
There is no chance in hell.
Really?
I don't think so.
Really? I think he's got like a season one or a one season arc, and then he's either dying or sent.
Well, somebody,
he's taken Burnham's place in the prison
dying,
colony.
Okay, somebody's dying. I know that's for
well,
sure.
Georgiou already did.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think he's going to be like a, you know, like the villainous admiral from Star Trek Into Darkness, you know?
Marcus,
Marcus. It's kind of, they even call him like a warmonger in this episode.
Well, exactly. Yes. I don't think he's long for this series, but whatever he's dishing out, I'm eating it all up.
But I mean, Peter Weller was really entertaining to watch in Into Darkness, and I think Lorca's following along the same path.
Okay, well, what do you think about kind of the potential of other people kind of wanting to be under his command, though? Because I understand why Saru is perfectly happy to serve under him, right?
Sure, yeah.
I don't think that Saru really fits in on the ship.
Well, I agree. He, like, this is a guy who seems very fearful of pretty much everything.
Exactly.
And why is he under a guy like Lorca? I don't know. It doesn't...
I can understand why he would want Saru on the ship. You want a first officer.
Yeah, but why would Saru? Why would Saru want to be on this ship? I mean, he was assigned.
Saru is very conservative, and he's always trying to take the safe route. So for him to be, you know, toiling with this experimental stuff, I don't see it.
Well, and they also, but they did mention that they're far from the Klingon front lines.
Okay,
so maybe Saru's digging that feature.
Although, is Saru in Starfleet in high-ranking position?
Yes, yeah.
No, but I'm okay with that. You've got people like, say, Cito Jaxa or Reg Barkley. Why is Reg Barkley?
Barkley's not first officer.
Sorry?
And they're not first officers, and I really did not appreciate when Giorgio left him in charge of the ship in the last episode.
Really?
Yeah, that was a bad move.
I'll throw it out here. Like, I think you want diversity on your crew.
You want
so
diversity,
if you've got...
but you want key people who can make good decisions, you know, in these high-ranking positions.
He's a panicker.
Yeah, he does panic. You're not leaving Barkley in charge of the ship.
Well,
I would love that episode. That would be the most amazing episode ever.
He did have a chance when he got connected to the ship.
True.
Yeah, oh, yeah, in the nth degree.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we're just taking it from like the very human perspective, where maybe in his species, I bet you Saru is probably the boldest among all the Kelpians because he actually joined Starfleet. Okay. I bet people think that he's way too bold, like in his home planet. So
like, this man's wild.
Yeah, exactly. So I can buy why you'd want somebody like Saru. Seems incredibly competent, does he not? Very smart.
Yes.
He's got, and I think it's good if you have different viewpoints being shared aboard your ship, which he was doing with Giorgio and Burnham.
What I'm fascinated to see is, I mean, we get the sense that Lorca may be kind of a whack job.
Yeah.
What happens when you have someone like Saru working under a whack job? Like, will he ever stand up to this captain?
I would say as maybe an ongoing arc, it's Saru realizing, hey, there's stuff going on here that I need to kind of bring up in front of the captain.
I think that Saru would be opposing, you know, something that he deems questionable, because he questioned Michael when she tried to take over the ship.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know. I'm digging Saru in Starfleet. I think it makes sense to me. You know,
yeah,
not...
he's a great character. Yeah. I'm really liking
his
journey.
Not as a first officer.
Well, we should also mention, like, kind of the whole conceit of this episode is Burnham ends up on the Discovery. It looks as if Lorca made it happen somehow. And they have to go visit a derelict vessel that has been the victim of some weird spore experiment.
Classic Star Trek, though. I mean, there's so many, especially original series, where they like investigate like a Federation outpost or a ship stranded, you know, just like floating in space. And they're like, how did this happen?
Aquiel. I think that's the go-to episode.
Well, I mean, you know, like Kirk's on the Constellation, the Doomsday Machine.
Yeah.
You know, this has happened a few times in Star Trek history.
I buy it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I buy it. And essentially, by the end of the episode, Lorca's offering Burnham a seat at the table. Like, hey, you want to serve on this ship or you want to go back to your labor colony, you know?
Right.
So that's the gist of it. As an episode three, I went back and I listened to last week's episode, and it was funny because we were kind of approaching it as a Star Trek series premiere.
Yeah.
Whereas it's so obviously kind of a manifestation of like television nowadays, where you're building up the universe in a slow, methodical way.
Right.
And I think this is a continuation of this. But how does this work as like maybe an episode three for you, Vicky? This is almost like a second pilot, right?
Exactly. That's exactly how I saw it. Even when I was watching the preview, it's kind of a second chance at it.
It's a new crew. It's a new ship versus what we were introduced to last week. Shenzhou versus the Discovery, what jumps out to you more? We spent more time on the Shenzhou at this point, right?
Yeah, I think that the Shenzhou, the technology seemed more modern on it for some reason, or maybe we just got to see more of it. The ship seemed a lot brighter, probably because of that
photo eye injury.
Sensitivity. Yeah, so, you know, the Shenzhou wasn't as menacing as the Discovery. But the thing that I noticed about the Discovery, when they were doing that overhead shot of it, the saucer section, it seemed that It could take a really long time kind of traveling in between because there were only like these connecting walkways.
Yeah, there's like an outer saucer, an inner saucer, yeah. And then like a core kind of.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Maybe from an engineering's perspective, that could be a big pain in the butt, right?
Yeah.
Is that why he ordered a site-to-site transport from his ready room down to main engineering? He's just like, I can't deal with these walkways at this point.
He's just lazy.
Is he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Laziest so captain ever.
You think he's unlikable and lazy, Cam? Yeah, this is not your kind of captain,
he's a real
is it?
Slacker.
Okay.
No, I think that he just did that for optics so that none of the crew would see him and Michael heading down to engineering together. That's how I took it.
Possible.
Would Lorca care one bit if people were whispering behind his back?
Or does Lorca, is he just so duplicitous? He just likes to lie to everyone at all times.
Yeah, that's what he gets off on. He's very manipulative.
it's not even like it matters whether anyone sees him. He's just like, I'm going to get past them. I'm going to be really sneaky about this.
And I wonder, you know, how much involvement he had in orchestrating that shuttlecraft. And, you know,
did you just say Lorcastrating?
I think I may have. Okay. I think
wow.
I may
wow.
have.
Anyways.
But maybe do you think that he cared that pilot died?
No.
That was my favorite moment of the episode, I think. Was
both of you guys started cracking up as soon as the pilot went flying
it was
by.
Hilarious.
It was like the in Titanic, the propeller man.
Yeah.
Who okay. falls off the back of the ship. I mean, like we both like, yeah, burst out laughing yeah. when that happened.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Because
no.
it was just a great comedic beat. Star Trek is not known for its yeah. great comedy. And I liked it. Like that really made me laugh. It was like the pilot going out to go outside and then just like whipping past the window.
Yeah, yeah. It was great.
But
was
answer
great.
Yeah. answer your question, Vicky. No, I don't think Lorca cared at all that his little plan of his to get Burnham on the ship cost the life of a pilot, right?
Yeah. yeah.
So. Did anyone else get a Rogue One vibes from that scene?
I didn't watch it, so.
Oh, okay.
All right. What specifically, though? Well, I only saw Rogue One once, so.
It was that Jin in the prison transport at the start, and okay. then the rebels, like, break into the transport and get her out along with, there's, like, other prisoners in there.
Yeah.
It was very similar.
Okay. I need to rewatch that one.
Yeah.
It's been, I guess, 10 months at this point.
Yeah. I don't think it would have impacted it because I'm trying to think of shooting times.
This would have been shooting like back in like late winter, early spring.
Yeah, so it probably wouldn't have.
It would have been post Rogue One.
But it probably would have been written in advance of that, right?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just coincidence, I think, but yeah. you never know.
Okay, but Lorca.
No, well, you know, Moby Dick has been such an influence on Star Trek. You know, yes. you think Orca, whale. Is Lorca the white whale of this yeah. season of Star Trek?
white whale in that, like, he's elusive?
You know? Someone has to, like kill him by the end?
Well, no, he would be more of the, is it Abraham?
Ahab.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Ahab, because he lost an eye.
Oh, it's all okay. coming together.
Yeah. Okay, he had the option to get a bionic eye, right? Yeah. Did you notice a lot of people so far, three episodes in, have like all these bionic appendages?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think this is intriguing because if you think about kind of the concept of the singularity in which like human beings become more and more... Vicky, you've got something.
Yeah. Well, if he had the option of getting a bionic eye, why didn't Geordi LaForge have that option in the 24th century?
Don't ask that question.
You know what? Maybe Geordi did not want...
But
I don't
gets
know.
A bionic eye later on.
Yeah, in by First Contact, he had the bionic eyes. Maybe they're like really crappy bionic eyes.
Okay.
Like they're a century older than what Geordi LaForge had the option of getting.
Yeah, maybe.
And also, okay, so you have one good eye.
It's like Mad-Eye Mooney from Harry Potter.
Maybe they discovered some lead poisoning in the...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, or it could be like one good eye and then one bionic eye, and it would have really messed up like how things looked.
Right,
so,
maybe.
I can understand. Why are you like just making me think about these nitpicky things? Yeah.
Speaking of the 24th versus this century, I was looking at like the computer screens mm-hmm. with like the three-dimensional display, you know, in the air. I'm like, boy, they sure didn't have that in the 24th century.
Nope. They caused carpal tunnel syndrome, so they banned them.
Yeah. No, but do you know why?
Why?
Too many lurkers. I despise lurkers.
Right.
Yeah. It reminded me, though, of crawlhead computer screens like that in Beyond. So it's sort of, they've just updated the aesthetics of Star Trek. It's just interesting to see.
I get it. Oh, but
I'm fine with it. I'm not complaining.
Well, this is not like the first time that we've experienced kind of this bionic, like, appendage sort of situation. We had that helmsman from the first two episodes. She appeared in the mess hall here, but she's got kind of a Seven of Nine sort of look going on now.
Cool.
Was it a little bit too reminiscent of one of the most iconic Star Trek characters of all time, though, Vicky?
Well, it did make me immediately think of that, but maybe that's just a nod to the Trekkies and not the movie watchers.
Yeah. We also had the Daft Punk in episode 1 and 2. She was, I think, at Tactical.
Area? Are you talking about Commander Area?
No. That was, I'm talking about episode 1 and 2.
Okay. Sorry, I was talking about this episode.
Do you remember Daft Punk?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
And we also had the dude who had like kind of all the bolts in his head.
Yes.
And so now we've got, I think it was Commander Irium. And
I thought it was Area. I heard Area, but we'll see, I guess.
We'll find out, yeah. Was that like a bionic dude, or was that like
it was a woman.
Robot?
It was a woman.
Or was it? Okay.
Yeah.
I think they were robots. I think they talked about... I'm getting confused with Orville now.
Uh-oh. We can get to Ortonville. We can get to Orville towards the end of the episode.
Yeah.
I think Commander Irium or Area, I think that's just an android, right? Like,
well, wasn't Data the first android in Starfleet?
I don't think that was ever established, though.
Wasn't it?
I think it was the first positronic net.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what they always said. It's like positronic.
Yeah, well, they had the android in Into Darkness, right?
He was like bionic.
Was he like?
He had like bionic.
He was like a cyborg?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was, he had like a number for a name.
Yeah.
So anyway. I'm intrigued by this crew, but it seems kind of like a scary, intimidating crew, and I think that's coming down from the guy at the top, right?
Wait, I thought you wanted to serve on the ship.
I'm just saying, I get why people have faith in Lorca,
right.
Although it seems as if he's recruited...
misfits of Starfleet.
Well, like, Landry seems like she's drinking the Kool-Aid wherever Lorca is going to be taking
the security chief, yeah.
Yeah. Landry, were you familiar with this actress prior to this, Vicky?
She was in Battlestar Galactica,
She played Tori Foster on Battlestar Galactica.
Right, okay.
I liked Rekha Sharma from that, so I was kind of intrigued what she was going to bring to the Star Trek universe as well. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of cool. I think she's actually from Vancouver originally, so you got that local connection, too.
She'll be on the podcast next week.
I'm trying to reach out and get her booked on. We've also got... Let's talk about this, because Cam, I think one of the issues that you had with the 1-2 punch of last week with those two episodes was you don't know if there were enough characters that jumped out to
you.
And I would have to say nobody's going to accuse Stamets or Tilly or Lorca of being boring
they were great.
Like blank slates.
Yeah.
Like, what do you make of, let's say somebody like Stamets, this is the Astromike.
Mycologist. He's a space mushroom guy.
That was my nickname in high school. He's very distinct to me. He's already maybe like my favorite character so far, and just like how he just does not give a crap about anything.
Really?
But
he gave me a gay vibe.
Well,
he is the first openly gay character on Star Trek.
Oh, is that right?
I guess Sulu in the alternate universe.
Yeah.
Star Trek Beyond. But
okay. It did come across.
Did
well,
it?
Well, okay. It could be the actor. It could be the writing. But I just like how he is not in Lorca's camp the way that, say, one Landry is.
Right.
So I'm intrigued by that. But what do you think about him? Like, just as kind of like being very curt with somebody such as Burnham or Lorca.
You know, for the storyline, I think that it definitely worked. But I think it's hard adjusting to that. Coming from the Roddenberry universe where all the characters kind of get along and they're all working together towards one common goal.
But did he imply, though, he was essentially conscripted here?
Yeah, he wasn't happy to be working for Lorca.
He
doesn't like Lorca very much.
I don't think he ever intended to go to Starfleet Academy or anything like that. I think he was essentially, he's kind of like Hawkeye Pierce, where like he didn't want to be in the Korean War, but they essentially grabbed all the doctors they could and send him off to the front lines, and that's where he is right now.
I look forward to the episode where he puts together a football game.
Okay. From the original film.
Yeah.
I remember that one. Okay. I there's some very racist nicknames used in that football game that I will not repeat on this podcast.
That movie's very problematic nowadays.
Yes, it is.
For many reasons.
Okay.
But, I thought Anthony Rapp was really fun in this.
Yes, I loved
him. As his character. I did wonder, though, watching it, I was like, is this a character that could go across multiple seasons?
Oh, like, I would say so.
Snappy.
I'm pegging him for death.
Yeah, really?
He's gonna die.
I was thinking that myself.
Okay, yeah. Okay. No, to me, I was like, oh, this guy's gonna be like the next big breakout character.
Well, you relate to him the most.
I do. Thought. Yeah.
Finally, I'm on the show.
They're already pitting him against the main character, and unless you know he can turn it around where they're gonna cooperate or you know see eye to eye, then well, his days are numbered.
I don't think Lorca's making it beyond season one, though.
I know. I think he's the captain of the ship.
Yeah.
But for how? So was Georgiou.
Yeah.
How'd that go?
But the ship essentially went down with her. So
true.
She's the captain. Yeah. Goes down with her ship. Yeah. Okay. I don't know. I'm intrigued where Stamets ends up. I'm just saying I'm loving everything he's dishing out at this point.
Yeah, no, Anthony Rapp is fantastic.
Yes. Yeah, he's a great actor.
I did wonder, though, just his personality seemed so tough that I have a hard time envisioning him as being sort of, because you know we've seen with all the previous series the crew at a certain point becomes kind of like a family unit to a certain degree.
Yeah,
I have a hard time seeing him fitting into that.
As of episode three, yes, but I can see him taking down his shield, so to speak, to a certain degree and becoming better integrated. Do you know who he reminds me of, Cam? Kaczynski from Where No One Has Gone Before. He's kind of got that attitude where like, I'm super smart. You better listen to me, right?
Kaczynski was such a worthless character, though.
Okay, well, a more valuable Kaczynski, but like, I don't know.
And Kaczynski wasn't really doing anything. It was the Traveler.
Okay, but what character in Star Trek does he remind you of? Is there anyone that you can compare him to, Vicky, or is he just kind of a unique little snowflake to a certain degree?
He is a little bit cocky. I just remember that episode of TNG where Geordi, he goes to the holodeck and he manifests that other engineer.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and Leah Brahms.
Yeah, and then he gets to meet her in real life.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So real life Leah Brahms, you're thinking.
I can actually picture her.
I was thinking, what about early Voyager Doctor?
Very curt, kind of like no bedside manner.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of comparisons about kind of these very
like tough-minded,
yeah, okay.
And not quite having the social skills necessarily.
I dig it. Okay, what about the other character? Main character we were introduced to was Cadet Tilly.
Yeah.
What do you think about this character? Have we really seen anybody like Tilly? Like
no.
The closest comparison? Like okay, are we going back
to
Reg Barkley?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going Saru and Tilly. They're both Barkley kind of surrogates, right? Yeah. What do you make of Cadet Tilly and her snoring and drooling?
She was very like excited college girl. Like, you know, I'm so excited to be on the ship. This is my first time away from home, and I get to meet a new friend. And
I can stay up as late as I want.
Exactly, and we can have popcorn.
Yeah. Well, what was it? She called it a roommate is a built-in friend.
Yeah.
I like that remark. Yeah, that cracked me up.
Not judging from my experience.
Oh, yeah, I've heard stories about your roommates, Cam.
I kid.
But with regards to, okay, we're speculating a lot about like how long Lorca is for the ship, how long Stamets is for the ship. I can imagine Tilly getting a promotion to ensign by the end of season one and sticking around and watching her, you know, 5 years down the road being a very different character, although very idiosyncratic still.
Yes, but I don't see her in the captain's chair.
Wow. You don't have as much faith in her as she does in herself?
No, I don't. She's a little too jaded right now.
Okay.
I thought she was fun, though. Like, it's a type of character the previous Star Trek series, I mean, other than Barkley, like, they tried to keep characters like that out. You know, when you're looking at the main cast of Next Generation, Voyager, etc., you're not seeing characters like this.
Who was the most neurotic main character outside of this? Was it maybe the Doctor?
The Doctor and maybe Geordi?
Or what about Bashir when Bashir was first introduced, like very early on where he was
maybe actually Quark.
Quark? But Quark wasn't like neurotic, I would say. He was very distinct, I think, the way that Tilly is very distinct.
Yeah.
So. Bashir was played a little too much of kind of like a cool guy.
Really?
Yeah, he was.
That's how you imagine cool guys?
He was a little douchey, but he kind of, you could tell he was a guy who kind of had a pretty easy life, I think. Like, he never struck me as, like, the nerd of the group.
What about the Doctor on Archer's ship?
Oh, Phlox.
Yeah, Phlox.
Well, Phlox was very, like, distinct and idiosyncratic, but...
He was very, like, established, too. Like, he had, like, multiple wives at this point. Like, we saw him kind of older in life.
As opposed to like somebody who's probably 20, 21 at
right,
this point.
Or the equivalent of an alien years.
Well, I'm just intrigued, A, what Tilly is going to end up doing, because she's assigned to engineering.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still a little confused, because if you look at her insignia, she is in the engineering operations insignia. She's wearing bronze, whereas Stamets, who's also assigned to engineering, he's in the science outfit.
Yeah.
So who's the chief engineer?
I was
this
wondering
ship?
The I've... same thing. I got really confused at a certain point. I was trying to figure out, is Stamets also the chief engineer? And then I'm
don't
like, no.
Believe I don't believe he is.
I don't think so either.
So maybe we'll be introduced to this individual later on.
Has the show, I don't even remember from the cast, did they ever announce an engineer?
Not that no? I can recall. Recall, though, in season one of Next Gen, they introduced us to like three different main
Argyle.
Engineers. There's Argyle.
I don't even remember that.
There's another fellow, at least. And I think there's like a third one. Like,
okay.
So, maybe we'll get like a revolving door of main engineers.
I think, I always thought like, I was going to say Argyle, but I thought like the engineer role is kind of a thankless job.
And that you're not hanging around the bridge so much?
Yeah, you're off the screen. You're really only being cut to give like exposition of like, yeah, we're doing this and this and, you know, to the whatever. And you're more like just giving technobabble to solve a problem. Like, it's not like character stuff. Well, like, if you're a captain or if you're on the bridge, you're interacting with the crew. It's like, quick, cut to the engineer.
But you know what? If the writers care, they'll make it a good character, like with Trip or with Chief O'Brien.
Here's the question. Do you need like an engineer character who's a major character on the show?
I don't think you need one. That's why they tried to do away with it on Next Generation.
Yeah.
But then they had nothing for Geordi to do after a while, so they're like, okay. Maybe it's just my own curiosity, but I am curious as to who the chief engineer is aboard this ship, because we have essentially three out of six main cast members assigned to main engineering.
Mm-hmm.
You'd assume that they're going to cross paths with the main engineer at some point, right, Vicky?
Yeah, I would hope so.
Okay. So overall, there's still one more cast member that we've not yet met. That is Ash Tyler. Best last name ever, by the way. it's still in kind of a universe building mode at this point.
Right.
So I'm intrigued. But if we get to kind of what the episode is about, and it's still in the building up sort of period.
Definitely, because we're still seeing Michael Burnham, you know, leaving this prison ship, being introduced into the world of the Discovery ship, and then being brought on a mission.
Yes. What did you think of this mission, Vicky, aboard the USS, is it the Glenn?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Glenn.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I thought that it was cool.
Yeah?
Yeah, I thought that it was cool. And, you know, I think that they're trying to bring that kind of gory aspect from other series, like Walking Dead. They're trying to entice maybe that viewership as well.
Sonequa Martin Green was just like, oh, I've got this covered.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
I've seen Blood and Guts.
I don't really like her as an actor. I think
interesting.
No? Well, let's talk about that a little bit. Yeah, she is the main character.
She is the main character, but I think that Anthony Rapp did a much better job in this episode. Like, his acting chops are just well beyond her.
But do you think she's okay, like a bad actress, or just somebody that you don't necessarily connect with as a lead?
I think she's I'm not gonna say she's bad. I think that her skills are limited.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because when Vulcan Hello, I thought that she did a pretty good job of being Vulcan, but you're also not having to convey a lot of emotion in that kind of role.
Right.
Yeah, that's generally maybe a little easier as well.
Yeah.
Well, what did you make? For anybody who hasn't figured out, Vicky, you're a woman. what do you make of having another female lead on the show? It's been 1995 was the last time that they debuted a Star Trek series with a female lead.
Right.
Does that intrigue you at all, or what?
I don't think that it. I don't think that it's any different than having a male in the leading role. So
yeah,
it's
just whether the show's good or not.
It doesn't hinge on
whether
it's a female or male. It's irrelevant to me.
Okay. Cam was actually the one that passed me the note and said, "Ask Vicky this question."
Oh, okay.
So,
that's all.
Yeah. I wasn't disappointed though.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I was actually a little worried.
Why were you worried though? Like, if she would be like awful, or?
Yeah, I think maybe it's just I didn't actually like Sonequa's character in The Walking Dead.
Sure.
And I think that she does bring a little bit of her character from Walking Dead over to Discovery.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't quite like that so much. She's got that. I don't know what the word is I'm looking for.
Okay. Well, I'll throw this out. I think that there's enough backstory with her parents being killed by the Klingons and being raised by Vulcans. I think there's enough where I'm liking what I'm seeing so far with this character. She's unique, though. And I like how this episode kind of calls back to what she's trying to do with her emotions, though, which is keep them repressed. Because I think she figures that's what got her into trouble, that cost Georgiou her life. And so she's going back into more of the Vulcan mode that we were seeing back in that flashback.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of how I interpreted that.
They gave her a real acting challenge, though, in the sense of, like, you're the lead character. Oh, and by the way, you went through Vulcan training, so you're really aloof. Now try and hold the audience's attention.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, that's tough. Usually when you're a main character, you're trying to be kind of a little more relatable for the audience.
Right.
Their fault, you know, you're the avatar carrying people through this world, introducing them to the Discovery in this episode. And then you're having this put on a character who's, you know, quite aloof and withdrawn.
Do you think Spock could have been the lead aboard the original series, Vicky?
No.
No?
No, no. You need somebody who's a little bit more charismatic.
Just kind of like, it pulls everybody into the center. Okay.
I think they should have built the entire motion picture around the Spock of that film.
Oh, man. I still don't know what they're trying to do with him in the motion picture.
But yeah, there's a reason Spock wasn't the lead character in the original series. Or the movies.
Okay, so do you think that this is concerning, though? Like, maybe...
I don't think it's concerning, because it seems to be working fairly well, at least for me, on Discovery thus far. I'm not sitting there going like, oh, this character's unbearable, or anything like that. I don't have that reaction to her. I just remain intrigued as to where the series is kind of going.
Yeah, I think that, you know, they're still in the stage where they're trying to figure out their character, so, you know, give them a little bit more time and maybe that'll really kind of flesh out.
By three episodes in with Star Trek, you generally have a base idea of what it's going to be week to week. But with this series, I think it's all very much on purpose, though, it's not going to be like that. It's every week's going to be a little different and they're building towards something. So it's tough to really compare this to, I think, like kind of the week in, week out sort of grind that we had with like 26 episodes a season from previous series.
What I'm really waiting for, though, is where the characters kind of get solidified and we get to see them talk to one another and just kind of have relationships.
Yeah.
This point, we're still at the growing pains period where, you know, this is Stamets. He snaps at her for a while and then leaves. It's like, well, they seem fun together. You know what I mean? Like, we're not seeing them as individuals working together yet. Like, I'm looking forward to kind of when we get to that little bit of a thawing out period.
But I would still, I 100% agree, but I would also say, like, if you look at, say, hour number 3 of Deep Space Nine, which I think was that past prologue?
Sure. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, that was not I would say that's a very mediocre episode.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call this episode mediocre. I was, like, just intrigued by everything that was going on. I was intrigued by the characters and the settings we were being introduced to. Also, I don't know what to make of this, I guess the crux of what the season's going to be, but this organic propulsion system that they're working on.
I was scratching my head. I'm like, what the hell is going on at this point?
Well, I think it's safe to say that the organic propulsion system is not going to go anywhere.
What are you talking about? Why is that, Vicky?
Yeah, I know. Spoiler alert.
Well, I've seen the future, let's just say.
Okay, yeah. So I think by the end of this season,
think they have to go and discover something else.
Yeah, they'll go back to regular old warp drive, right?
Yeah.
So is that another reason why Stamets probably is not long for the ship?
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
In my head, I'm picturing by the end of this season, Burnham is somehow redeemed and Lorca's gone and she's got command of this ship. And she's got Saru as her first officer and Stamets is the science officer, kind of taking Saru's role from the Shenzhou.
Yeah, I don't see that.
No?
I don't see that.
Okay, that was my prediction. Vicky on the record saying Tyler does not know what he's talking about. I like it.
For me, the show is just like the captain is Daft Punk. And the first officer is Aria.
I would love that. Like I can imagine their conversations where they just like link into each other through Wi-Fi. There's no dialogue between any of those.
None. It's all just text at the bottom of the screen.
Yeah.
Flashing light.
Yeah.
So what? Am I the only one who's a little confused about what was chasing them around the USS Glenn?
Okay, let's get to this because the USS Glenn scenes where they go on the ship. There's people in various states of
like
disorder.
Yes.
Physical disorder.
Like as if they were in a very bad transporter accident.
And, yeah, yeah. It was kind of like the motion picture beaming scene.
Yeah, you know? Except we actually got to see the results.
Yeah, yeah. Ugh. And then this like four-legged beastie running around. Like,
why?
You know, this is like, a lot of this felt like an homage to Alien.
Exactly, exactly what I was thinking.
But more than Alien, it was more like...
It was like Alien versus Predator. where the Klingons were the Predators.
Did
he just shush you?
That was
a pretty good line, right?
Yeah.
I like that moment.
I was thinking also of like Event Horizon. And also like, do you remember that movie from the 90s called Relic?
Oh, with Guillermo del Toro directed that one?
No, that was Mimic.
Oh, Mimic.
Relic was a movie where it was like this, it was like a museum where they got this ancient creature brought in. It came back to life and was like attacking people. But one of the big things they marketed for that movie was a metal door with the creature trying to pound through the metal door.
I do remember that, yes.
Yeah, they really marketed a lot. And that's all that was going through my head as I was watching that scene of this creature trying to pound through the metal door.
I didn't understand what Burnham was trying to do when she asked for the phaser and was going to, quote unquote, piss it off, because I don't think that she really did anything.
You know what would have been the best ever? She fires at it, runs away, and then it turns and kills the rest of the crew.
Yeah. I was also confused. So they did leave behind that creature aboard the USS Glenn, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Lorca has an identical creature.
No, they beamed it. They beamed it on board their ship.
Landry was the one who told him, who told Lorca, "We've beamed it over."
Yeah.
Okay.
Right,
because
yeah.
He said he called it the guest.
He said, "Snug as a bug in a rug."
Right.
I didn't
right.
even make that connection when it said the guest. I was thinking it was.
I was thinking Burnham.
Yeah, no. Me too.
Yeah. And then he goes and touches the force field, and that beast is aboard. For some reason.
Again, this is why Vicky's here, to explain the plots to us.
I know. I appreciate your presence, Vicky, because yeah. I'm quite slow.
So, okay. So, Orca's... Okay.
Orca?
Lorca. Is Lorca creating these genetically engineered beasts?
No, I think it's another experiment.
But did he create it?
I don't think he did.
I don't think he did, no.
It's just, okay.
That's why he had to acquire one.
Was it created on the Glen?
I guess so.
Not necessarily. They just
maybe they
just happen to have one.
Okay. Is this their weapon against the Klingons?
I'm wondering.
I feel like maybe it got loose and, you know, caused some kerfuffle in engineering, and that's why all of the crew members were in the state that they were.
So wait, okay, because in my head I was thinking like maybe these space spores had like warped them inside out to a certain degree.
Well, yeah, exactly, but. That some containment breach had to have happened.
Yes.
Yeah.
That helped loose this beast as well?
No.
Oh, okay.
The beast got loose first, and then the spores.
Vicky, I'm deferring to you because I think you're following along much better than I am.
I like to think the beast was just the science officer and just wanted to get off the ship.
Yeah.
Okay.
But also, this room that the beast was being kept in by the end of the episode, it had like a lot of skulls of other aliens.
There was one that looked like a Gorn skeleton.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I mean,
okay.
The Gorn weren't encountered officially by Starfleet until, you know, Kirk encountered
right.
in Arena. But if Lorca's off the grid, it's possible
he's hunting Gorn.
But then if you've got the skeleton in your ready room, you know, I think that counts as first contact.
Yeah, people would know.
Yes. I didn't notice that.
Yeah, it was very reptilian looking.
I don't think it was Gorn though.
Probably not, but yeah. it definitely looked kind of Gorn.
Like I know the skeleton that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. Intriguing. No
yeah,
doubt.
Yeah, so is Lorca going to have... Look, this episode had some allusions to, you know, literature, obviously. You had Alice in Wonderland stuff with Burnham reciting Alice in Wonderland lines.
Yeah, I don't know. That was just too cheesy.
What was that?
I don't know.
Going through the Jeffries tubes.
It was some kind of meditation.
I guess.
Vulcan meditation.
Well, we found out later that she had read that book when she was young. Amanda gave it to her.
As well as her own child.
Yeah.
So we know now Spock knows all about Alice in Wonderland.
Are we opening the door to a return of the White Rabbit from Shore Leave?
Maybe that's what this was meant to be this entire time. One of my least favorite moments.
Yeah.
Eye roll inducing moments.
But, you know, okay, so we had that literary shout out.
Mm-hmm.
Is Lorca kind of a Frankenstein character? Dr. Frankenstein.
A Dr. Frankenstein.
Yes.
Well, the monster in Frankenstein is just called the monster, but people always call him Frankenstein. Yeah. But yes, Dr. Yeah. Frankenstein. Is that going to be his sort of arc? He's this character who's trying to create things and is only going to have horrible outcomes.
That's tough. I that did not jump out to me as, kind of that character, though. Like,
no.
Because I'm trying to think. It's been a while since I read that book. What was his motivation, though, in the book, though, to pursue this? Like, I think there was... didn't he have a... like a wife that...
He had a fiance that was...
Yeah, a fiance. Yeah, yeah. And I think there was some issue with her, or else didn't the monster kill
the
fiance?
Wasn't the fiance his cousin?
Something like that.
In the book, yeah.
Yeah, but didn't the monster actually kill the fiance?
Oh.
It's literally
this
been
is, this
like...
This is where I get it mixed up between the book and the 1933 movie.
Yeah.
31, maybe. Yeah, I can't...
Okay, well, let's
remember.
Find out if Lorca married his cousin.
Okay.
And then we can work backwards from that.
Yeah, that maybe is something to kind of keep track of as the episodes continue if we've got a bit of a Frankenstein connection. Because Star Trek is famously, influenced by classic literature.
Yeah.
So it's not impossible.
So, guys, overall, episode 3. Vicky, what do you think of this? We're past episodes 1 and 2. What do you think of an episode like this?
Well, episodes 1 and 2 got me really excited for the series, and I think that this brought us back down to earth.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that it's not nearly as riveting as maybe...
No, it's not, but you gotta spread the budget out a little bit, right?
Sure. Yeah. I think they're still kind of, planting seeds, mm-hmm. and still, they need to introduce you to an entirely new setting and a new crew, and I'm okay if they do that slowly. Like,
it is interesting, though, they do the big splashy, epic story for the crew that is disposable.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Although we do have the 7 of 9 clone who managed to show up. So
she kind of looks like I can't remember her name. She played Marjorie in Game of Thrones, and then she played that other character in Hunger Games.
Oh, Natalie Dormer.
Yeah. That's who she looks exactly.
I see that. Okay, Cam, as an episode 3 for a Star Trek series, where are you at right now?
I enjoyed it. It kind of reminds me of an episode that you actually don't like from Enterprise: The Strange New Worlds, where it's like you come off Broken Bow, which is like a really fantastic. Pilot, right? And then you get into like that episode, which is kind of a standalone Trek episode. It's a smaller scale, maybe not as impressive, but at least I enjoyed that one because of the character dynamics, even though the central conceit is maybe a little goofy. I will say for this episode, I think it has an issue in that because it's serialized storytelling, when they try to introduce this story of this creature on this ship, it felt really just kind of like wedged in as like, this is what the episode's about in about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then we leave.
Yeah.
Like, it felt very abridged.
What I wonder is, how did they sustain this creature? Like, how did they know what it eats? Like, how are they getting food for this giant beast?
Lorca fed him washed out cadets.
Or the pilot. No. Maybe that was the...
Yeah, the pilot's corpse. Those prisoners that were being transported. There's no one on that shuttle when it took off.
Okay.
So I can buy that.
So that's what I'm... I'm not saying I'm concerned. I'm just going to keep my kind of finger on that one in future episodes to see if they can introduce their kind of standalone story of the episode in a way where it doesn't feel like it's wedged in. Because I was watching this and it's like, we're like 20 something minutes into the episode. And I'm like, isn't there like kind of a, because I, we'd seen early reviews that said it was kind of like an alien-ish type homage. And I'm like, well, when is that going to start? They barely have any time.
But I was honestly delighted by that fact because I wanted to spend episode 3 getting to know the crew and getting to know the setting.
Sure.
And like the first, at least, probably 2/3 of it, that's what we're doing. I think what you said, though, perfectly valid criticism in that it felt a little bit wedged in.
Like
the
I didn't
whole
really care
thing.
About any of the monster
yeah,
on the
I
ship stuff.
I didn't really care either. But I thought it was a fun, interesting kind of sequence. To me, what pops out, though, is the Klingon shushing everyone. Like, I've never seen a Klingon shush.
Right.
Like, that to me was like, that's kind of maybe the standout moment. But was it kind of like cheap on their part that they had an identical class starship that was having the same issues and then they're just running through darkened corridors of an identical ship
that's
and engineering?
Star Trek tradition.
I know.
But, there was a big...
Is the USS Glenn the equivalent of the USS Yamamoto from the Next Gen episode?
Where Silence Has Lease?
Where Silence Has Lease,
yes, as well as, the one from the Tholian Web or the Defiant?
Yes. And yeah. Also, what was the Inter Arma Enum Silent Ligus, where they had the U.S. or the Voyager clone, the Intrepid class ship there.
Yeah. Or the Constellation from Doomsday Machine.
There's so many different...
you got to just keep repeating that ship and just, you know, change the lighting.
The USS Valiant. There's so many different ones to pick from. Okay. I digress. For me, episode three, I'm not fearful of where the show's going. To me, I'm intrigued by the story threads. I really do dig these characters, and I think that's the most important thing for me, is like whether or not I'm gonna like really enjoy these characters. I'm loving Stamets and Tilly. I think Lorca is an intriguing guy. I wouldn't necessarily want to go to a like ball game with him, but I think this is like a guy who's not like a simple character. And there's a lot of questions about it. And wherever this series goes, I'm with it at this point.
Yeah, me too. Like, I almost wish they didn't include the alienish type stuff in this episode and just have an episode building sort of our relationship to the crew on the Discovery.
I'll throw this question out to you guys, though, but is this ever going to be thought of as one of the most memorable episodes of Star Trek, though?
Definitely. No.
It seems like it's more of that world building. It's not going
to be... It's the Strange New Worlds.
Sure.
Episode, you know, it's like we've got kind of a spooky story. We kind of wedge it in there, but it's mostly about introducing your characters and getting used to their camaraderie.
Okay. So there you go.
And if you have a scary sort of situation, it's a easy way to kind of throw that story in where the audience understands it in no time. Scary monster on a ship. Got it. You don't have to explain anything. You know, you can just watch the crew be the crew.
Yeah.
And, you know, they can, you know, the audience will fill in the blanks. Right. So I think it made sense to go to that sort of well for episode three.
Before we wrap up our thoughts on this particular one, though, I just need to give a shout out to the alien design in a lot of these shots that we're seeing in, like, say, the mess hall.
Yeah.
Did you guys notice that alien with a giant head?
Yeah.
Like sitting in the background.
I didn't notice that.
I love, that's my new favorite character after Daft Punk, the background character.
Right. Giant head alien.
Yeah, the blue giant head. I'm just like, oh wow, I need to know more. I need to know more. Should that be my cosplay for next year at the Vegas convention, Cam?
I was thinking for Halloween. Coming up.
Yeah. Fair enough.
You'll get booed off the stage again.
Yeah.
Now, you know,
that's literally happened, listeners. I literally dressed up as a Star Trek character and got booed off stage at a Halloween. Where were we? We were at Malone's downtown. Yeah. It was, I don't know. You won that costume contest, though, Cam. Anyway, you can tell I'm not bitter.
We started this episode kind of talking about ranking the captains. I was just curious, you know, where does Lorca rank with you guys? And actually, I'm curious, you know, especially from Vicky, where does Georgiou rank for you right now?
Well, you know what? I would put her, I think, just below Janeway at fourth.
Okay.
Yeah.
So kind of mid-tier.
Yeah, mid-tier.
What was it you liked about that character?
I think that she did have a lot of charisma, but I think I can tell you more about what I did not like about her.
Oh, okay.
I think that she made really bad calls as a captain, and I think that her relationship with her first officer kind of clouded her judgment a lot.
Okay. Like she was too... vehemently against her first officer when the first officer
I think that they had their relationship was a little bit too friendly, so that she didn't have the same authority.
Well, I but was it any friendlier than what you'd see with Kirk and Spock? Like, I could picture Kirk and Spock going to a desert planet and opening up a well.
I wonder if it's a difference, though, between kind of the friendly camaraderie versus, like, mentor and protege.
Sure. Okay, yeah. I think that's, like, a
and
good
almost
point.
Like, almost kind of like adopted daughter type.
Well, yeah, did you get that vibe? You know, is more of kind of an adopted daughter?
Well, she did want to take on Michael for that reason, because she wanted to kind of mold her a little bit, right?
Yeah.
She saw that potential in her.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, and she saw herself as a failure because she didn't accomplish that.
That's true. Okay. And then she died.
Yeah.
Like exactly. With the worst body armor ever.
You know what? I'm kind of holding out hope that they'll bring her back in a future episode, because they didn't collect her body.
Yeah, exactly. Like, she was on the transporter pad, like, doing her best to try to get the body, not collected. I think there's been, I'll just say this, Michelle Yeoh's been so part of all the marketing and all the interviews. I'd be genuinely surprised if we don't see at least one more appearance of her by the end of the season.
Definitely, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Cam, What did you make of the captains at this point? Where, you know, broadly would you place them in
it's
your rankings?
It's very hard to put them high.
Wait, sorry, did we ask Vicky where she would place Lorca?
Oh, Lorca, yes, yeah. Indeed, Lorca.
I would probably put her...
Number one?
No, not number one, above Giorgio.
Okay.
Really?
So
Captain Lorca.
Kind of mid-tier.
I like him.
Okay. I like him too.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, and I don't know enough about them, either of them yet to really make any good judgments.
Were you a Harry Potter fan? Are you into the Lucius Malfoy sort of...
I watched them, but I wouldn't say that I'm a big fan or anything.
Okay. Why did you bring a wand to this recording?
For my wizarding.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. She's more into Lord of the Rings. I said wand, I meant staff. Apologies. Cam, where would you rank these captains at this point?
It's so tough because the other ones, you know, you obviously have so many episodes establishing how they work in every facet of the job.
Yeah.
This is kind of like the one-dimensional looks so far because we've only seen, you know, 2 hours and 1 hour. But I'm going to put Lorca, I think, at the bottom because to me, like, what Lorca doesn't have that I think all of the others have is I feel like I can trust the others.
Sure.
And if I have a captain, I want to be able to trust them. Even, you know, kind of douchey, you know, alternate universe Kirk, you know, Pine Kirk, you know, in his younger years. Like, I feel like I can trust that character to a certain degree.
Well, I feel like you can trust him because he knows what he's doing.
Can you?
But you don't know what he's doing. Like, you just have to have faith that your captain knows
what
he's doing.
I don't know that I would have faith in Lorca living in darkness.
Yeah, I think you're just used to thinking that the ship is a democracy.
It's true.
He'll put you in your place.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. He's great. Yeah. That's why he's on the bottom.
Well, okay. Whereas, what about Giorgio?
I think I would put Giorgio... I would put her, I think, above Chris Pine Kirk. I mean, he was at the bottom previously for me.
Uh-huh.
I don't know that I would put her above Archer.
Okay.
I don't know, because I kind of agree with Vicky in that, like, I saw a lot of issues with her. And to me, it had more to do with the fact, like, she was someone in her limited screen time just seems so driven by Starfleet rules. Like, that she couldn't see beyond them. Like, whereas when I think of the captains who I ranked highly, like, they could kind of, I don't know, they kind of could see a little more big picture or have a little more of an improvisational ability. I didn't get that sense from her. Do you know what I mean?
I kind of figure what you're saying, but like you said earlier, we only saw just a fleeting glimpse.
That's why it's tough.
I didn't think that the Shenzhou was kind of like their flagship or anything.
No, it was kind of older ship.
Yeah, it was an older. So, you know, their crew didn't have that same level of prestige. So
right. She's not the Picard of the fleet, right?
No, she's not. So, I mean, it would probably be fitting that.
She probably hasn't had, like, the trials by fire that, you know, Kirk and Sisko and Picard and Janeway have had, for sure, in duty.
For me, with the captains, I have to think about, like, who would I want to serve under? I would not necessarily want to serve under Lorca, so I guess I'd put him at the bottom, even though I think the character's intriguing. I'm fascinated by him.
He may be a better character than some of the ones, you know, I've ranked higher, but...
With Giorgio, I would put her above Kelvin Kirk as well as Archer. Like, Archer is... He's a first, like, captain, right? So he just did not really know what he was doing.
Yeah.
So
I feel a little flexible on that point. It's only, I think I give Archer the edge because I saw so many episodes of him and so many great Archer moments. Whereas I never really walked away going like, man, that was an amazing moment of Giorgio, you know, captaining that ship. Right?
Yeah.
You know, because we're seeing it through the point of view of Burnham. We're kind of on her side.
Right.
So we're really only seeing, at least from through our eyes, the captain be kind of wrong.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, whereas like Archer, he was right sometimes, damn it. And, you know, I always think of that episode, Cogenitor, where he's like ripping Trip apart for, you know, interfering with the alien species. And I'm like, you know what? Archer sometimes threw down.
Yeah.
You know, he ran that ship sometime. Well,
he's got enough black eyes to prove that he would be willing to throw down.
Yeah. Okay. So speaking of new Star Trek... It's time for the good ship Ortonville to pull up with his review of the fourth episode of Seth MacFarlane's new series, The Orville.
So when you say, speaking of Star Trek, do you mean that this is just like a complete ripoff of Star Trek?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I'm at episode four. This really does seem like a throwback to 90s television. It had an intriguing sort of sci-fi conceit behind it, in which... We're introduced to this ship in which the inhabitants don't realize they're on a ship. They think they're on a planet. So it's about whether or not the crew reveals that fact to them, and it shatters their entire worldview. They essentially think that they're in like this very almost a pre-industrial sort of society.
Yeah.
All I can say is just it felt like 90s television. It was just like all the...
So like Full House.
Pretty much, yeah. No, but all the conflicts, it's mostly external conflicts, like bad guys creating conflicts, whereas the internal stuff going on, they tried to develop the characters by like, hey, tell me about why you don't get along with the commander and why you don't get along with the captain. I don't think at this point the show has passed the Bechdel test.
Okay.
We're four episodes in, and it's just fascinating. Like,
I wouldn't have expected that from a Seth MacFarlane.
I know, project. I know. So I'm sticking with it just out of curiosity's sake, but this is just, and Seth MacFarlane penned this one once again.
Yeah, so it's four in a row that he's written, right?
Yeah, and I'll just say this about the act breaks. They're ending the act breaks on like the most boring things you could ever imagine. I'm just like, really?
Is it sort of like that episode Schisms where Riker yawns and then the opening credits
start?
That
was my favorite teaser of all time. Becky, have you watched The Orville at all?
I have,
yeah. What did you make of it at this point?
It's basically a Star Trek knockoff, but you know, I thought of it would be more of a parody, but at the same time, they seem to be taking themselves a little bit too seriously.
Yeah. There's a certain level of self-importance mm-hmm. attached to this that I find very misplaced. I'll say this. The one moment that I did like from the most recent episode, though, is...
And it was called If the Stars Should Appear, for those at home.
There you go. They're in whatever the equivalent of a turbo lift is. And you notice in Star Trek, everybody's always talking in the turbo lift rides?
Right.
Right.
I think they try to address the fact, like, what about the awkward silent turbo lift rides?
Sure.
And so they're trying to address that, and they're being more subversive. I think that's when the comedy actually works. It's when they're just kind of subverting expectations when it comes to a Star Trek show. And so that worked for me. The other comedy I thought was pretty bad, though. It's just like, I don't know, like it was typical like fart jokes or whatever. I'm just like,
yeah,
oh, okay, whatever. So I'm still aboard the Ortonville. I just my issue was like after we watched the pilot episode, I thought I was intrigued enough by what it could do, and if Seth MacFarlane had enough insight and self awareness to bring the series to a different level, I'd be intrigued by what it would be. I don't, based on all these episodes I've watched, it seems to be like the same thing every week where there's not a self-awareness that I was hoping for.
Do you think Seth MacFarlane is happy just delivering mid-level TNG writing, essentially?
I'd have to guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know, if you look at fan response, fans seem to still like it.
They seem happier with it than Discovery, a lot of them.
Yeah. So look, the ratings have been okay at this point.
Yeah.
I was convinced it would get canned after one season. I think there's a good chance it'll be picked up for season two. So, okay. And if there's enough Star Trek fans, because I think it has to be Star Trek fans that are tuning in every week.
Right.
You know, so I don't know. I'm have at it, guys. I'll stick around for as long as I can. I just wish that they would really try to subvert all these Star Trek tropes.
Right.
And I'm not seeing enough of that.
No, Vicky, you've been watching it too. Yeah. What has sort of been your take on the four episodes that have aired?
Well, I do like the issues that they bring up.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it's very reminiscent of TNG. It is TNG, basically.
Yes.
But yeah, the humor is a little bit lost on me.
Right.
Because like you say, it is a bit...
You're way too sophisticated for it. Is that it?
That must be it.
Yeah.
That must be it. And it's the characters. I don't think that the characters really work for me.
Yeah. I'm kind of... A lot of the characters I just find very forgettable, and I'm not really invested in them. So there's literally... I don't know, the scene where like the one of the second officer's mate is feeling bad, so he...
I didn't understand that, because I saw that episode and that was kind of like the opening scene.
Yeah.
But they didn't really address that towards the end of the episode, so I was wondering what that scene was all about.
Well, they're trying to use like stereotypes of like, he's a woman, so he needs to eat ice cream and watch like silly movies to make himself feel better,
okay.
Even though this is an all-male species. But they want to have it, oh, there's stereotypical gender roles in each of these relationships.
Okay.
And I'm just like, really?
That didn't
like
really
this
have
is...
anything to do with the rest of the episode.
Well, they didn't really address it either. It's just like, they're trying to draw on the third episode, in which like the mates had this argument about like gender reassignment surgery for their hatchling.
Right.
And so I guess they're still.
I thought that was a really good issue.
Okay. So you know, I'm wondering if they can bring it up another level, though, and just figure out what the show's meant to be. Cam, I keep going back to this.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just feels like it's neither fish nor fowl at this
point.
Right, right. So, okay.
Okay, well, that's another Ortonville segment. And yes. I guess we'll have a Cam Fiction segment in coming, maybe in 2 weeks, when I'll be talking about the first Discovery novel, Desperate Hours. I will burn through it. I'm not going to say I'll have it for next week, but I should be able to do it in 2 weeks, I think.
Burn through it or
burn him
through it.
So we had some response. Some of our foreign correspondents piped up their thoughts on the Star Trek Discovery premiere. So let's play some of those.
Hey guys, I thought I'd drop in. This is Jesse Okendo from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, to give you some impressions of Discovery, the first two episodes. Sorry I'm late getting back to you. Overall, I think it went great. I loved it. I had a few nitpicks, but more than anything, it was just nice to see Star Trek back. I've seen these twice now, and I gotta say the most impressive part for me is the music, the way they were able to blend a little bit of nostalgia into some new tones and new tunes. Especially emotional was the appearance of the Shenzo the first time picking up Burnham and Giorgio off of the planet. The ship appearing with the music was quite fascinating. Shockers for me were the death of Giorgio and the death of T'Kuvma. I expected T'Kuvma because of the foreshadowing when they were mentioning he'd be a martyr when Michael said that. And Giorgio, I kind of thought about it, but honestly, just because I saw a special guest star when it first started and it kind of piqued my interest. Other than that, I think it was great. I mean, the few nitpicks are, you know, when did Michael Burnham go to Starfleet Academy? Or back then, did we just pick him off the Science Academy and throw them straight on a ship? I didn't quite get that. And the hologram communications, which I know we see in DS9, but not sure how we explain that here 10 years before TOS. Lastly, the space fight, which was cool and awesome and all those ships, but the lighting and the lasers was a little animated and a little unbelievable. But other than that, great show. Looking forward to more. Thanks, guys, for listening to me. Have a great day.
Okay, so thanks, Jesse. Did you guys have any takes on some of the points Jesse raised?
Yeah, well, I had the same thought about Burnham just showing up in that 7-year flashback. It's like, all of a sudden, she's in Starfleet, I guess? They never really addressed that. I'm assuming she never went to Academy, right?
They haven't said as much, have they? They haven't indicated that she went to
Starfleet. She was at like the Vulcan Learning Center / Science Academy, but she never went to Starfleet Academy.
Yeah. And they haven't said what her job was when she first got to the ship, have they?
Well, she would have been a xenoanthropologist, I'm guessing, right? So,
I guess.
Any thoughts about what Jesse brought up there, Vicky?
I would agree with Jesse when he said that he was surprised when T'Kuvma, and maybe not so much that Giorgio died, because I think we kind of saw that one coming with a special guest. But the fact that T'Kuvma died, I'm kind of disappointed.
He seemed interesting, right?
Yeah, you know, and I think it would have been great if they could have followed through on capturing him and having him as a martyr. But I also think that Michael Burnham, when she was on that structure, she said that she was trying to escape from the fight. It didn't appear that way to me.
Right.
So when she shot T'Kuvma, it's kind of, I kind of thought that she did that deliberately as well. You know, she could have shot him in the leg or something. Why did she have to...
She's letting her emotions get to her.
Exactly.
She's forgetting her Vulcan heritage.
Exactly.
So,
I was a little bummed T'Kuvma died too, because we haven't seen a lot of major ongoing Klingon characters. A lot of them would, you know, get a couple episodes and then die or whatever, just be written out. You know, you've got obviously the big ones like Martok and Worf, etc. But this character was presented in such an interesting way that I would have been really, I think it would have been cool to see that character charted over at least a few episodes. and maybe build up and have a little more impact, because, you know, he had a decent amount of impact in two episodes, but I would have liked to have seen maybe how scary you could have made this character as maybe his power grows.
Well, I think he was essentially there to be the martyr, and, you know, I think we're going to hear more about Takuvma.
Yeah.
Just won't necessarily see the actor that role. I still think there's a lot of potential with characters like Volk or Cole or Laurel. So I'm intrigued by the Klingons that we have been introduced to.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that definitely needed to happen to propel the storyline, and I get that. But
yeah,
all right. But yeah, I'm with you guys. I was kind of surprised about this. Cam, do we have any more incoming transmissions?
Yes, we do. We have another one, and I'll play it right now.
Hey guys, it's Scott Hardy beaming in from not so sunny old London, England. Just want to give you my thoughts on Star Trek Discovery. I really liked these two episodes. I thought it was a great start, and I'm really excited to see where this show goes. But what I wanted to talk to you guys about today and hear your thoughts on is the fan reaction, or backlash, you might say, online afterwards. I've spent most of this week debating with them and feeding the trolls, unfortunately, and hearing some of their concerns. And a lot of them are saying, oh, I would have rather have had Captain Worf, or I'd rather have just been set past Voyager, or I think Discovery is set in an alternate timeline. Okay, it's not. It's been confirmed. This is Discovery. It's happening. Deal with it, okay? If fans are listening to this show that don't like Discovery for actual critique-y reasons, fine. I'm 100% a fan of that. It's freedom of choice. But if you don't like this show for the sake of not liking this show, then you are no longer a Trek fan. There's the door. Please leave your com badge and rank pips on the way out. Just want to hear what your thoughts are, guys, and I'll see you next time.
He's throwing the hammer down.
Wow.
No, bless the gauntlet. Scott. Yeah, bless Scott's heart. I was just shaking my head at a lot of the comments, and I think he brings up the good distinction. Like, I think there's valid critiques of Discovery, but I think a lot of people are bringing up just dumb reasons not to like it.
Yeah.
Like, there's this one guy who's posting on our Facebook group, Cam, and I have no doubt this guy's not actually a listener.
Yeah.
But he's, like, saying, like, it's really unrealistic that, like, two women would be in charge of a starship. I'm just like, what are you talking? Like, shut up. Yeah, yeah, it's stuff like that, Vicky. And it's just like, it's very aggravating.
Is he afraid that their cycles would sync up?
Yeah, exactly. It's like that sort of stupid stuff.
Okay.
And it's so absurd, because as I, you know, I responded and I said, but it was cool when Kirk and Spock did it. That was awesome.
Yeah.
And
what's his response to that?
He's like, well, you know, I'm just saying, you know, men are stronger. And, and then I said, well, let's see. One's a soldier and one is trained in the Vulcan arts.
But I mean, I will say that it was dumb that both of them went over to Takuvma's ship.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. Having the high-ranking officers going
over.
Well,
no, and the fact that, okay, well, now that I know that Michael Burnham, she actually has Vulcan martial arts training, then, okay, that's a little different, but I wasn't aware of that before.
Right.
No, but so, I mean, I mean,
I find a lot of the comments just aggravating, and I just kind of, I don't know if I'm going to change anyone's mind by responding with cogent arguments. I think people have made up their minds, and no amount of reasoning or logic will change their minds.
And I've rolled my eyes so hard at, like, the people saying, you know, enough with the feminism in Star Trek.
I know.
Because, first off, if it is feminism, it's not that great at it, because we cut to episode 3 and it's a male captain again.
Sure.
They didn't even, you know, stick with it that long. Mm-hmm. So if we really want to make that claim, you know, it's like, we knew this was going to happen. It's like, I don't know. I just roll my eyes at this
stuff. This is the first time that Star Trek has premiered in the age of social media, where every buffoon has, like, their kind of bully pulpit that they can jump up on.
Definitely.
And I just wonder what we would have been hearing back in the 1960s, you know, like the
60s or 87 when Next Generation. Yeah, like, I mean, Next Generation would have been brutal, because you hear so much about how, like, vitriolic the response was to another Star Trek series coming out.
Mm. You know, like, you have a woman in charge of security. That's not realistic.
Yeah.
This is like, I don't know. Like, I'm just, I don't know what to do about, like, some of those Facebook comments that we got on Cam, because a lot of them, I was just like, should I delete this? But then people were actually kind of, there's some people that were smart in that they would just push it right up to the line.
Yeah.
Where I'm just like, okay, like, this guy's a professional troll. Like, there were professional trolls on our Facebook page, which was just,
we made it, Tyler.
Yeah. Yay.
It does bother me when feminism, quote unquote, gets in the way of storylines for movies and for TV. And I think that was one of the worries that I had for this series. But it wasn't an issue.
Burnham and Giorgio were just regular people, though.
Yep, exactly.
And I think that's what they want, is just kind of just...
Yeah, and they weren't trying to make a stand for anything or represent... Well, no,
right. Mutineering.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they're pro-mutineering.
No, they're just... characters, and they're fighting for what they believe in.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree 100%. I don't know. Like, I just, it's whatever. Yeah, it's just so silly.
Well,
but, you know, there were some good comments on the Facebook page. It wasn't all trolling.
No, and that's what keeps me putting forward more of the content that we're doing. Because we're also going to be, we posted two blogs already, Cam.
Yeah.
You tackled kind of the comparisons between the two episode premiere and Crimson Tide.
Yeah, the connections are eerie.
Yeah, and then I did a blog talking about how this is the sixth or seventh time, depending on the account, that the Klingons have been reintroduced to the series. So how does this one stack up versus Errand of Mercy from the original series? So you and I, we're going to do more blogs this coming week.
Yep.
And next week we will be following up with episode 4, The Butcher's Knife Cares Not for the Lamb's Cry.
Is that the most metal Star Trek title ever?
This is so weird. It was the name of my high school band, which was a death metal band, you know, which huge coincidence. I don't know how that happened.
I feel like A Taste of Armageddon is the only episode title that comes close.
Okay.
For like throwing up the devil horns.
Not statistical improbabilities?
No, so much.
Okay, not so much.
Trouble with Tribbles. Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Head on over to our Facebook at facebook.com/subspacepod. We'll again have discussion groups going, I'm sure, all week about this episode.
Yeah, as long as you're not... anti-women trolls who...
Yeah, go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Please.
But yeah, post away. And also you'll be able to follow all our content. We're posting videos as well as the blogs that I mentioned as well. We've never produced more content any given week than what we did in the last week, Cam.
No,
so
it's true.
If you guys aren't following us on Facebook, you are missing out on a lot of exclusive stuff.
Definitely. So I guess next week we'll be back with the episode Tyler mentioned earlier. So again, Discovery episode 4. Where will it go from here? I think it's going to be exciting to see.
I'm very, very much anticipating episode 4.
What I like is, you know, this series, because it's serialized, you're like, where could it go? Whereas, you know, we go back to that Strange New Worlds from Enterprise. You watch that episode, you're like, I don't know, I guess next week will be something else. But it's right. there's not like an overarching story that's carrying you into it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think the serialization works well in that regard, where even if the episode isn't a home run, you're like, well, at least there's threads I'm following into the next one.
Yeah, and to me, it just comes down to the characters, and I love the characters so far.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm invested in the series at this point. So
we have to be.
Well, yeah. we're podcasting on it every week. So. Okay.
Okay, so you can also reach us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V as in Voke, was not in this episode, Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P-O-R-T-O-N, N as in non-Vulcan number cruncher.
Okay, and Vicky, you're not on the social media, as I recall.
I am not.
Well, you should hop on over to our Facebook page one day.
Yes.
Fight back against the trolls.
But you do have a tin can with a string attached to it.
Yeah, it works.
How can people get in touch with you? What wire are you on? Which string do people need to attach it to?
It's actually twine.
Twine? Oh, yeah, twine. That's why I've been having difficulty.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jute. Jute.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.